let's go back over our case studies. Our first case study was Chaim's Dilemma. It was about a man whose wife caught a very, very unfortunate disease, which did not have a cure at the time. And this one scientist came up with a cure. The only problem is that he was charging an exorbitant amount of money for this cure. Let's say $100,000. And this guy was broke. He didn't have any money. So he tried collecting money. He couldn't. And he begged the scientist to give his wife the medication, knowing that it would save her life. And the scientist said no. He said, you pay the money, you can have it. If you don't pay the money, you can't have it. So the guy went through the following dilemma. Do I let my wife die, or do I steal this medication to save her life? That was the dilemma. Can I steal? Halachically, morally, can I steal to save someone's life? And it's very similar to Robin Hood. Robin Hood would steal to save the poor. And we think of him as a hero. But is this really heroic? Is this really even mutter? Are you allowed to steal to save someone's life? So last week, we brought up this question. We said it shouldn't even be a starter. Because first of all, you have a chiv l'samo d'amreacha. You have a chiv to save a person's life. And we rejected that for many different reasons. Number one, the chiv l'samo d'amreacha might not extend to money. It might mean that you have to exert yourself, you have to save a person's life, but who says you have to spend money to save a person's life? Now, even if there is a chiv to spend money to save a person's life, the chiv might be on the person, but not on the money. So that person has a chiv to spend money to save your life, but you can't go just take the money yourself. You can't say that, oh, since you're a chayiv, your money also has a chiv, and therefore I can just take the money for, basically do your action of saving my life for you, and save my life. You can't do that. Only if the person himself saves you is that l'samo d'amreacha, but for you to just go and take the money, that would be stealing. Furthermore, even if the chiv does extend to the money, it might only be, like Moshe said, if the person is there witnessing the problem. Meaning if a person sees you in dire need of saving, then he has a chiv l'samo d'amreacha. For you to just go and steal the money without him being there and to witness you in Sakana, that might not be there might not be a chiv l'samo d'amreacha, and like the rabbi says, and therefore in that case you would not be allowed to steal.
But there's still a chiv l'samo d'amreacha on yourself, isn't there?
So you have to save your life, but not at the expense of someone else. So you can't steal someone else's money. I mean, that would be the chiv. Is there a l'samo d'amreacha on the other person, not you? You of course have to save your life. And then we gave another answer, which is that perhaps the chiv of l'samo d'amreacha is on Klal Yisrael, but no single individual. So you can't say that you're chayv to spend money to save my life. And we also said, theoretically, my chazas, which is that, let's say we're all chayv to save your life, and the guy comes and says, I want to steal from you to save my life, he can just say, why me? Steal from the guy next to me. I mean, why specifically should I have to lose money to save your life? Why not take from the guy next to me? And of course, that guy will say the same thing, and everyone will make that excuse, and no one will have to do it. So
you're the other one with the medicine.
So exactly, so that would not apply in the last case to our case study of Chaim's Dilemma, because he is the only person there, and theoretically, also, if he stole, like, not at night, but if he stole a day, then the scientist would be there, lefanav, and you can't say the Raiva Shita, that, oh, the guy wasn't there, the guy is there. But this shouldn't even be a problem, because whether or not there's a Chiv l'samo d'amreacha, the Chai Behem should knock out the Avira of stealing. Because we have a principle that there are only three averos that you're not allowed to violate to save your life. Killing, idolatry, and avodah zarah. Idolatry and arayas, illicit relationships. And stealing doesn't fall into that category. So the question is that this should be a non-starter. That's where we ended last year, which is that this should be a non-starter. You should, of course, be allowed to steal to save your life, and anything else should be a really big question which we need to delve into and understand. Because, as we're going to see today, there are a lot of shitos that are going to seemingly imply that you are not allowed to steal to save your life. And the question which we're going to have to grapple with, and we're going to develop this later on in this year, is why? Why you wouldn't be allowed to steal to save your life? So, to start giving a couple sources which kind of should surprise us, if you look at source number 3, the Gemara is talking about the following case. David HaMelech is with his army, and they're attacking the Plishtim. But the Plishtim are hiding in a Jewish field. So David HaMelech sends a message to the Sanhedrin, am I allowed to burn down this Jewish field, this Jewish person's field, knowing that it's going to cause him a tremendous amount of nezek, he's going to lose a lot of money, but it'll either kill or flesh out all the Plishtim, which is going to save the lives of many, many of my soldiers. So I'm going to be saving many lives. So should I be allowed to steal to save the lives of my soldiers? Now, you could also argue that times of war are different. But let's just argue that this is a case of stealing to save a life. Now, the Gemara fascinatingly responds as follows. If you look at the bold, the Gemara says, "Mahu lahatil asma mechaver." Are you allowed to steal to save your life? So the Sanhedrin responded, "Shalchulei aser lahatil asma mechaver." Avol ata melech ata umelech portas osol derech ve'ein mochin v'yedo. So source number three, Sanhedrin responded that normally it's absolutely aser to steal to save a life, but you're a melech, and since you're a melech, you have rights to all people's fields in your kingdom, and therefore you have a right to do with it what you want, and you can do it. But what does this imply? If you weren't the melech, then you wouldn't be able to do it. Now, Pashat Shad, this Gemara, is that it's aser to steal in order to save your life. And if you turn to source number 7, if you turn the page, Rashi says explicitly, without any qualification, that it's aser lahatz l'asma mechaveiro. And most of the Achronim pick up and think that Rashi actually thinks that you are not allowed to steal to save your life. And if you look back at source number 5, the Gemara that we kind of discussed last time, the Gemara is talking about where a rodef is chasing after you. Someone's trying to kill you. In order to save your life, you end up causing someone some type of nezek. So let's say someone is chasing after you and you jump through a person's window, you know, on the run. And you hide, you know, whatever it is. Or you take someone's, object which is really valuable, and you use it to snatch the rodef, and you cause that person a tremendous amount of nezek, tremendous amount of monetary damage. So the Gemara says that it's also to do this, and you're chayav to pay back. Now the question we're going to have to ask is that bepashtos, the pashtos of these Gemaras, is that the Gemara is saying you're not allowed to steal and save your life. That's the pashtos, and that's what Rashi seems to say. Now what could we offer to suggest to kind of downplay the also?
Kind of like a question, kind of like, why are you allowed to transgress, like, let's say Shabbat in order to save someone's life? Over here, not allowed to transgress stealing.
That is a brilliant question, which we're going to have to deal with. Which is, number one, why would stealing be different? And number two, why would it be worse than other affairs which you are allowed to violate?
Shabbat's even more much.
So we're going to have to think about it. Good.
And a possible, I don't know about the second part about Mako, I just know that difference to be given on Mako.
Ah, good. Okay, we're going to have to deal with that too, because that's a major factor which we're going to have to deal with.
Rashi Torah subscribes a greater penalty to Shabbos.
Exactly. So the question is going to be, in terms of how we deal with mitzvahs, is it about the Onesh? Is it about, you know, Hashem versus Benam Chavero, in terms of who's going to be Mochel, who's not going to be Mochel? We're going to have to think about it. Those are two very important factors. Shabbos seems to be more like on the Machmir side, but Zela seems to be more on the Benam Chavero side. So we're going to have to deal with whether or not that's a factor.
You say, like, there's an element of mechila here, you know, and...
Stam mechila?
If true, then the amount of money that I'd be costing you would change. Meaning, this guy is losing his whole field. He wouldn't be able to find his whole field.
Okay, very interesting, very interesting. So, the stam assumption is that a person's not going to be mechila in anything, and that you have to pay back. Now, the question we're going to have to ask is, first of all, that's more psychological. Would a person retroactively be mochel? Can I assume that? Stam das? What's stam das? Do I go out, do I take a survey and ask what stam das is? Or do you assume that what's yours is yours, what's mine is mine, and I can't take what's yours unless I ask?
I would ask you, would you...
So that's actually
break your window.
Halachal amayis, it's a very, very fascinating question. Am I allowed to just go, let's say I'm in camp, and it's a classic halachal question, which is asked all the post-camp. And I want to go play a baseball game, but I don't have a mitt. But my friend next, you know, to my bed has a mitt, but he's not there. Can I assume that he'd let me borrow his mitt and I go borrow his mitt? So according to some posts, that's stealing. That's not borrowing, that's stealing because I can't project myself unless you could, how do you chesbon when a person bounces? So we're not going to deal with that now, but it's a very interesting question in regards to, can I assume he'd be mochel, and therefore, so not going to be, what if I don't know the person and I'm stealing from him? Versus it's my best friend, I'm just stealing from my best friend, I know that he'd let me do it. So can we assume it's not? So that's an interesting question. We're not going to deal with it now, but that's very interesting. So one way of downplaying the Gemara, which says that us are still saved alive, is Tosfos. Tosfos, source number 6, says that what does it mean when it says us? What was David's question? David's question was, Ibayli ichayev l'shalim kishahasel asma b'pnei pikuach nefesh. Tosfos is saying as follows. He's saying, the question was never whether or not I'm allowed to steal to save my life. Of course you're allowed to steal to save your life. What was the question? Am I allowed to steal on condition I'm not going to have to pay back? Meaning, am I allowed to steal knowing that I don't have to repay and replace that which I steal? So what does the Sanhedrin of Galilee respond? No. That would be usur. You have to pay back when you steal. Meaning, it's you can. What's the nature of the chiv? Is it a loan? Is it, no, there's a hat to steal, but now there's a new chiv to replace that which you stole? But you can't steal on condition with the intention of not paying back. Yeah.
Then the question is, like, the Heinz Dilemma,
is
that he knows he doesn't have
the
money.
Ah, so back to our case, if you want to project that onto Heinz Dilemma, so let's say he doesn't have, we're going to get to that question in 1 minute. But, theoretically, we can say that there's a chiv, an ongoing chiv to pay back whenever he does get the money. Heinz won't give it to him, kind of like a loan, like, you know, a mortgage, kind of, you know, it's an ongoing chiv to pay back, yeah.
So I think with this toast, you could probably answer the Shabbat question, because can't pay back Shabbat. Because like you can pay back money, but Shabbat is something that,
that
once it's there,
it's
that's
but
it.
But that the question doesn't even get off the ground according to Tosfot. Of course you can steal to save your life, just like you can steal for Shabbos. If there was any cheshbon, we can say even more so that stealing, even if it was worse, you have the option of paying back. Shabbos, there's no paying back.
Exactly.
Can't make up the Shabbos.
Exactly.
Unless we go really chal Shabbos achas kelishma Shabbos al sarvei, where it is more paying back. But you're not really replacing. You're more, and that's in terms of the bigger goal. But then we have a deeper answer, which gets back to a couple of the sugyas we did earlier on in the semester, which is the nature of what v'chai b'hem does to an avera. You're allowed to violate all the averas in Torah except for the big three because of v'chai b'hem. Now the question we asked was, what does v'chai b'hem do? Does v'chai b'hem knock out the avera? Hashem says that when it comes to saving your life, there is no avera. The cheeseburger is no longer usher. When Goy says, eat this cheeseburger or I'll kill you, when it comes to saving your life, you eat the cheeseburger. There's no iser anymore. Or is it that, no. V'chai b'hem is a megala that you don't have to give up your life for mitzvahs, except for the big three. So the iser remains, but you don't have to give up your life. Now the question is, what happens in our case? Why is it usur? So one theory is that v'chai b'hem never knocks out the avera. It's just a megala that you're allowed to violate to save your life. So you're allowed to steal to save your life, but you still violate stealing. And when you violate stealing, now there's a chiv tashlumin afterwards. So the isser means the isser remains, and you're chayav to pay back. Not that you can't do it, but that when you do it, you have to pay back. Okay, yeah?
Could say another option. This isn't a situation of a chayav. Or, you know...
Of course it is. That was okay, so you're going to go on, but that's all.
It's too preemptive.
Ah, so you're gonna, now the question is, what's considered Hatzalah? Where do we kind of create the factor of this is Pikuach Nefesh versus it's too theoretical? That's kind of like the Milta B'Hud in terms of Pikuach Nefesh Lofaneinu, but I would argue that this is definitely a Pikuach Nefesh case, because we're dealing with war, we're dealing with a battle. It's like literally, the police team are right there, we're right here, we're about to go to war. It doesn't get any more Pikuach Nefesh than that. So that is a cheshbon, but...
It's more regular case of Pikuach Nefesh, or is that Kutra?
So here, I mean, you're trying to downplay the nefesh element here and say this is more in terms of a preemptive nicety rather than someone's dying and I'm trying to save them.
Or war is just totally...
That's what I said before, which is that war might be a different situation. But then the war by nature is a case of pikuach nefesh in terms of there is death, you know, everywhere.
But also to bring it back into the dilemma, I mean, if a guy has been diagnosed with X, Y, and Z, is he in the throes of death in such that, you know...
What? So that gets back, there are a lot of shoes we're not going to go into now. The Maram Chik talks about it, how to define Pikuach Nefesh when something's considered Hatzalah versus when it's too far and too low of a, you know, like, there's a 1 in 1,000 chance that a person's going to die. Is that considered Pikuach Nefesh? So how do you kind of, you know, justify the term Pikuach Nefesh? That's an interesting question.
We're just going to die, not for another 3
exactly.
years.
So that's also, Rav Asher Weiss has an interesting shoes about, is it Pikuach Nefesh if I do something now knowing that it will save my life in the future? So this act isn't going to save my life, but it's going to create a situation where in the future it will save my life. So we're not going to talk about it now, but these are obviously interesting issues when it comes to Pikuach Nefesh. Back to what we were talking about. The second step is that V'chai V'hem does usually knock out the Aveira. So usually there would be no Isser here, but this case is different. That means that normally there would be no Isser in terms of saving your life. But this case of stealing is different. Now, there are two possibilities of why. One is that this is a mitzvah b'nam l'chaveira. And then when it comes to b'nam l'makom, Hashem says, to save your life, you're good. No aveira. But when it comes to wronging your friend, do you really have a right to do that? So yes and no. Number one, my life is valuable. But number two, how can I justifiably wrong my friend? So the solution is that the Avera remains, but I'm allowed to do it. So I steal from you to save my life, but I still have to pay you back. It's not like Hutra, where there's no Avera anymore. There's a Dechuya, where the Isser does remain. But the second option, which we're going to have to talk about soon, is that stealing might be different. Stealing might be a more Machmir Avera, in which case normally the Chayben does not get out, but for stealing the Chayben does not get out. What we're going to have to ask is why. We're going to develop this soon. So that's going to be our real question. Real question is, why would stealing be different? Is it because of chavera, or is it that stealing is worse?
Different.
What's the havamina? What?
Different from what?
Different from all other mitzvahs, which you are allowed. So Moshe asks a question, which is, what if you are not able to pay back? What if you can't pay back? For example, the Binyan student has a fascinating case where he talks about autopsies. We're not going to be able to do autopsies this semester, but maybe next semester we will. It's a fascinating topic. So the issues are, number one, you're not allowed to get hanah from a mace. You're not allowed to be menavel, to be mevaza, to disgrace a dead body. And you're also not allowed to delay the burial, halonas a mace, of a dead person. But let's say you want to do an autopsy. So in that case, you're cutting open the body. It's a disgrace to the shaman. It's a disgrace to the person. You're also delaying the burial. And you're getting hanah. So the question is, the Binyan Sion says, is that why aren't you allowed to be mevaza the mace? What's the issue? What's the problem? The Binyan says is that you're stealing the kavod of the mace. You're stealing the kavod, the honor of this mace. You're disgracing him. So, but you're saving lives, because you're going to learn from this autopsy important information, which could, let's say, save people. And let's argue, even it's, it's Lefano. There's a chola which we know will actually be saved because of this autopsy. So are you allowed to do it? So he says, according to Rashi, you're not, because you're stealing to save a life. You're not allowed to steal to save your life. But even according to Tosfos, you're not allowed to do it. Why? Because you can't return the cover that you're stealing. Because you're stealing the cover of the mace, but you can't return it. Now, the question the Poskim ask is, what if you can't return it? So one option is that it's really a condition. The only way you can steal is if you can actually return what you steal. But it's possible that the reason why you can't steal to save your life on a condition that you're not going to pay back is because lahachas. It's like, I'm stealing only because, and I'm not going to pay you back. But if I'm in a case of onus where I can't pay you back, rather than I just don't want to, I choose not to, then you might be able to. So it's sort of Heinz dilemma. Even if you can't pay back, you might be able to. It just depends in regards to how strictly you want to take Tosu Shita. But in Tien, though, would say that you're not.
For an autopsy, though, why can't you just restitch the body and make it like, same way?
So it's not about the status of the body when it goes into the ground. It's the very act of cutting up the body. Meaning the bizayon is the fact that you are cutting open a tzalan elegant.
Even if, let's say, the person agreed to
His body. This is a topic which we can literally spend, like, not one shiur, not two shiurim, but we can spend a whole semester talking about all the definitions of autopsies. It's just going to take a whole shiur now, so I don't want to get into it. But what you're talking about is actually one of the heterim in regards to, if it's really his kavod, then what if he's not kavod? So that would be a very interesting issue. Yeah.
Is that the name of chalik in terms of, like, what your das is when you're stealing the object? Would you say that it's chalik of conceptually, whether it's something which needs a mitashimun? Kavod is not something you can't pay somebody for kavod. There's an institution of boshes.
Interesting. You could argue that maybe the chiyuv chazara, the chiyuv of tashlumin, is only in a case where there is shayach to be tashlumin. But then you can also argue that maybe the heter to steal is only because of tashlumin. It could be the isser is only if you don't return, or it could be the heter is only if you do. And if you can't return, even fundamentally, maybe that would be an issue, unless you think that. Meaning, once again,
it wouldn't be a practical thing. Like, let's say I'm the fourth person in the world.
But the
thing I'm
saying,
it's
not about whether practically can return it. It's about you are wronging someone, you have to replace it. If you can't, even if fundamentally you can't, you are now stealing without the solution of the chazara, and that's us. And that's what he would argue. Yeah, I hear what you're saying in terms of once there's no option to return, maybe it doesn't become a factor. But he can argue that it's always a factor, even if fundamentally you can't do it, now it's just a problem for you. That's not a heter, that's simply a loose hole in terms of the solution.
I was saying that whenever you fundamentally could pay it back, even if practically you can't, that would still be heter because it's something which is needed from the Tashlumin. But like, if for Boshes, I can't pay you back for your Boshes.
Well, fundamentally you can't, but we can assess how much it's worth in terms of what you would pay, and then we can assess, I mean, for Chamisha Devarim and Chavala, you pay for both shows. There is a tashlumin. It's not a replacement
right.
or a, you know, kind of a repayment. It's more of a knas, but there is a payment.
Right. So that's why I'm saying, like, you could be mechalek fundamentally things which are tashlumin versus not tashlumin. Do you mean tashlumin?
I hear. I'm saying if you're going from the perspective of the person who's being stolen from, there shouldn't be a chiluk. If you're going from the perspective of the person who's stealing, then you can theoretically argue. That's all I'm saying, in terms of whose perspective you're going to choose to go from. So now, what I want to do is just show you a couple different Gemaras, which once again are going to create this problem, where it seems to be that you're literally not allowed to steal to save your life. And then we're going to delve into what Simon was troubled with, which is, why in the world wouldn't you be able to steal to save your life? What's so bad about stealing? So if you look at source number 10, turn the page. So the Gemara is talking about the following case, talking about Edim who are trying to retract their Edus. So let's say Edim sign on a Shtar Mamon. And then they come to Beis and they say, listen, we sign on the Shtar, but we are retracting our Edus. They say we were Ketanim when we signed. Or they say that we were forced to sign. Or they say that we were Apostle Edus when we signed. So they want to retract their Edus. So there's a machlokas in the Gemara between Rav Meir and the Rabbanon whether or not you're allowed to retract your Edus. Now, first of all, why would you be allowed to retract your Edus? Because you can argue that until it's Mekayim in Beis Din, until there's Kiyum Edus in Beis Din, the Edus is not official yet. So until, I mean, it's a question of where does the Edus really come into play? Is Edus complete when you sign it, or is it only complete once there's Kiyum in Beis Din? So that's one issue. But there's a machlokas whether or not you're allowed to retract before there's Kiyum in Beis Din. Rav Meir says you're not. And it goes through each one of those different reasons why you're not allowed to say those things. Why you're not allowed to say you're a katan, why you're not allowed to say that you're a pasul edus. But then when it comes to being forced to testify, so let's say a person points a gun to you and says, sign on this shtar mamon, you know, sign that this person owes me $1,000 or I'll kill you. So you're basically stealing, right? Because you are now causing this person to pay $1,000. You are, in essence, it's a little less direct if you think about it, but you're causing a chisaron, you're causing this person to lose money. So what does the Gemara say? If you look at source number 11, Amar Rav Chisda, Kasava Rav Meir, Eidim Sha'amru Lahem Chasmu Sheker, Ve'al Targu, Yahargu Va'ya Chasmu Sheker. The Gemara says that Rav Meir holds that you're not allowed to say in court that this person forced me to sign on a shtar, and to cause the person to lose money. Why? Because Rav Meir holds that you have to give up your life rather than steal. You have to give up your life rather than cause this person to lose money. Now, why aren't you believed to testify that you did that? Because that's an avera. And Eid of the Ma'at makes him sasa rasha. You're not allowed to go into court and testify that you did something, which is asa, which makes you a rasha.
It's not one big three, though. I understand.
Exactly. That's what we're going to have to get to. I mean, we're building up the question. We're going to have to assess what's going on. Because right now, what I want to build in you guys is a real, exactly what you're, this kind of, you know, visceral response of like, what's going on? It doesn't make any sense. So one option is, like, we don't understand, which is that you're actually not allowed to still save your life. But there are other ways to understand this Gemara. So if you look at source number 13, the Ra'ah, he says, he asks this question, and what is his answer? He gives a fascinating answer. He says, why aren't you allowed to steal, save your life? It doesn't mean that Rav Meir says that you're better to give up your life. He doesn't mean that you have to give up your life. He means that you're allowed to give up your life. He says, look at the bold. The Yesh Amrim, the Hashta, Lav Midina Kamrinan, Ela Midas Chasidus. That you're allowed to give up your life rather than steal. So if you guys remember, we gave a shiur a couple weeks ago on violating the big three versus the non-big three. And the question is, are you ever allowed to give up your life for non-big three mitzvahs? A guy comes over to you and says, eat this cheeseburger or I'll kill you. That's not one of the big three. So you have no chiyuv to give up your life. Are you allowed to give up your life? That was the question we asked, right? Exactly. So that was the famous machlokas Rama and Tosfos. Rama says, absolutely not. If you give up your life, it's like you commit suicide. Chayiv in nafsho. But Tosfos says you are allowed. The question is, what's the nature of this machlokas? So, if you recall, this was based on the nature of v'chaydem, like we just discussed a couple minutes ago. V'chaydem can either knock out the avera, or it can be megala. The avera remains, but it's megala that you're allowed to violate the avera, save your life. Now, when the Rambam says that by the non-big three mitzvos, you have to violate it. You're not allowed to give up your life. Why? So if you think that the Chayav knocks out the Avera, the reason you have to violate it is because there's no Avera. The Avera was knocked out. It's kind of like a person saying, here, I'm going to either kill you or take a step forward. There's no, of course you take a step forward. You didn't do anything. But if you think that the Avera remains, then what's the Rambam going to say? Rambam is going to say that it's still, the Chayav is a Chayav. That yes, the Avera is still there, but it's not one of the big three. There's no Chumras Avera, so you have to violate it. It's a commandment, V'chaimem. You have to violate this to save your life. Or, and remember, because there's another option of Kiddush Hashem, the Rambam holds there's no Kiddush Hashem, either ever, or there's only Kiddush Hashem by the big three. But now if we go on the opposite side, Tosfos, why are you allowed to give up your life by non-big three mitzvos?
Is it
No. So the Farhesi is a different issue. That's Kiddush Hashem. Or maybe it gets turned into something else. But we're talking about not public, not Shas HaGzera, just on big three. God comes over to you in your room, you're by yourself, there's no massive Chil Hashem. So why is Tosfos say you're allowed to? Number one is that the Chayav might be a Heter, not a Chiyuv, a Heter. So the Avera might still be there. And since the Avera is still there, you might be allowed to give up. Or you can say that there's Kiddush Hashem. Because according to Tosfos, why would you be allowed to give up your life? It still doesn't make sense. Because there's an opportunity to be mekayem Kiddush Hashem. And then it depends. You might hold that there has to be when the Avera is still there. So it's only he holds a v'chai behem that doesn't knock out the Avera. Or maybe even the Avera does get knocked out, there's still a kiyum of Kiddush Hashem. It depends whether it has to stem from the Avera.
Gives the new meaning to the phrase ba'al nefesh yet.
Yeah, I mean, no, I'm saying it. According to Tosos, he's looking at Kiddush Hashem as an opportunity. As basically the opportunity to show your love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to melt into the oneness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the greatest opportunity. It's the greatest mitzvah you can ever accomplish. It was given to us as a Yerusha, spiritual genetics from Yitzchak Avinu. And this is something which Netzach Chaim talks about. And Ruach Chaim, Chaim Volozhin, talks about how this is a Jewish spiritual gene, the ability to be Moser Nefesh, and Adam Vasar Shem. It's an amazing thing. So according to Tosos, you're looking for the opportunity to show your love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But, let's apply it to our case. So if Meir is saying that you have an opportunity to give up your life rather than steal. So what can we say? We can use some of Tosos' stars, which is that V'chai Behem does knock out the Avera, but there's still an opportunity to Hashem. Or V'chai Behem doesn't knock out the Avera is still there, and therefore V'chai Behem is a Heter. Or we can say Kiddush Hashem is building off of that. And that would be just a normal thing. But we can say something else. We can say that normally, we agree with the Rambam. Normally, let's take the sheet that normally V'chai Behem knocks out the Avera. But stealing might be different. Right? Normally, V'chai Behem knocks out the Avera, and since there's no Avera there, you can't give up your life. You're not giving up your life for anything. But stealing might be different. Now why? Back to our two reasons. Number one, it's Be'an L'Chavera. So, Mitzvah Be'an L'Makom might get knocked out by V'chai Behem, but Mitzvah Be'an L'Chavera might not. Hashem might be Mochel and say, okay, listen, Shabbos, you can violate Shabbos to save your life. I'm Mochel. But stealing is not about you versus Hashem. There's also an element of you versus your friends. So you can't do that. So you're not allowed to. The Avera is still there. And the second option is that stealing is worse. The normal mitzvos, you are, V'chai Behem knocks it out, but stealing, the Avera remains. But even in those cases, even though the Avera remains, you're still allowed to violate it to save your life, the Avera is just still there. However, since that Avera is still there, what's the reason you're not allowed to give up your life for the non-big three mitzvos? Because the Avera got knocked out. But in this case, that Avera is still there. You're allowed to violate it, but you're also allowed to give up your life, since that Avera is still there. And that's what the Ra'ah says. He says, look at the third line in sheet number 13. All the other mitzvahs, right? So he quotes the Rambam Shita. Then he says, so I gave you that entire introduction just so you can understand that line. So you understand why he's saying that really it holds up the Rambam. You're not allowed to be Mishai ben Asher, the Lashon exactly of the Rambam, but this is different. Why is it different? Because stealing is different. And the question we're going to have to ask is, why is stealing different? One option is Ben Al-Khavir, but that's not what he's saying. Because he says that all the mitzvos, you're not allowed to, but stealing, that's in its own category. So remember how we saw like Shabbos is kind of its own category, where Chol Shabbos Achas, Kilos Mor Shabbos Harbei kind of puts it in its own category, where V'chai Behem applies to all the mitzvos, the big three applies to those three, but Shabbos has to have this specific source. We're kind of seeing the same thing for stealing, as it's not so bad that you can't violate to save your life, but it's also, it's not one of the big three, but it's also not one of the rest of the mitzvot, so you're just allowed to violate. Now we're going to have to start thinking why this would be different. Why this would be different. Okay? So just, we're going to, yeah.
I mean, it doesn't knock out what you're saying, but just, Hara, he's saying this explains the Havim of the Gemara.
Yeah, oh, the Maskara is in the Rejap, it's the Halacha. But the Halacha, we hold you while I steal. But just also, just if you want to get one more really great point so you can understand this Gemara on a much higher level, what's the whole point of the Gemara? The Gemara is saying that you're not allowed to make this claim in court because in other Mason's Asarasha. So according to what we just said, it makes perfect sense. Because you are allowed to steal to save your life, but there's an Avira that remains here. Normally the Avira gets knocked out, but here the Avira remains. And because the Avira remains, even though you're allowed to do it like in terms of saving your life, it still makes you a Rasha. And therefore, if you testify that in court, that would make you a Rasha. So Ina the Mason Atma Rasha is Rav Meir's explanation, not of why you can't steal to save your life, but why you can't say that in court. The Gemara ends up rejecting this is only the Havamin anyways. But just in terms of how you understand the flow of the Gemara, in terms of what's behind the surface of what Rav Meir is actually trying to say. So let's do one more Gemara before we go on. So if you turn to source number 21, the Gemara says, it's talking about the big three. So the Gemara Yerushalmi is saying that you're not allowed to violate the big three to save your life. But then the Gemara goes on and says, "Lo sof davar b'she'omer lo harugas ploni." It's not only when it says, "Go kill someone or I'll kill you." Right? We know if someone says to you, "Kill this person or I'll kill you," you're not allowed to kill him. But then the Gemara goes on and says, "El afilu chamoses ploni," you have to give up your life. Now what's chamas? Chamas is when I go over and I force someone to sell something to me. I point the gun at you and I say, sell me that watch, here's the money, or I'll kill you. So that's really basically a form of geneva, because I'm forcing you to give me what's yours. I'm paying you, you're not losing, so that's the big question which we talked about last time. Is the nature of geneva the fact that you are losing money, or is it the fact that I'm taking what's yours? So in this case, you're not really losing money. I'm paying you back. But I'm taking what's yours by force. So now, what is this Gemara saying? It's saying that you are not allowed to do that to save your life. So the simple pshat is that you're not allowed to steal to save your life. But if you look at source number 22, the fascinating explanation of Chasam Sofer tries to once again downplay this entire avenue. He says, what's going to happen? I go over here and I say, give me the watch or I'll kill you. And what does the guy say? The guy says, oh yeah, sure, take my watch. So that would be nice, but most people, or according to this, some people would say no. And what's going to happen is that this guy's going to end up killing him to get the watch. So a guy comes over here and says, listen, you have to go get that watch for me or I'm going to kill you. So now you need that watch. So you're going to go over to this person with a gun and say, give me the watch. What happens when he refuses? You're going to end up killing him to save your life. So really this is a question, and that's also why it's connected to the previous explanation, because what was the sentence right before that? Not only can't you kill someone to save your life, but this. So the question is this a contrast to killing someone to save your life, or is this an extension of killing someone to save your life? Well, according to that, it's an extension. So now, the question which you've all been waiting for, which Simon has asked a couple of times in this year, is what's going on? Why? What's the svara that you wouldn't be allowed to steal to save your life? It's not one of the big three. So why would you not be able to do it? What do you guys think?
Like a Rambam-esque kind of thing when he says about murder, it just ruins the fabric of society. Namara.
It's not one of the big three.
Some Namara were destroyed because of it.
But I'm saying the Gemara specifically mentions the various you have to give up your life for rather than violate. So why wouldn't it include stealing? You're going to say if the Gemara of the big three is not all-inclusive, like why would it leave things out? Right? It's difficult. So here are basically the main options. The first is that this is an avizrayu, it's a subcategory of murder. that stealing is connected to murder. Now, why? We're going to talk about that in a couple minutes. The second option is, like Nidhi was saying, is that really, to answer the question he's asking me, is that there's not really a big three, there's a big four. That we know the big three classically, but there's really more than just the big three. The question we have to ask is why we only have the big three. Why isn't this included in the big four? I mean, why don't we have the? Why doesn't everyone go around saying you can violate all the mitzvahs except the big four? Why do we know there's a big three? Why isn't in the Gemara's and Sanhedrin and Yoma and Pesachim, which talk about the big three? Why is it only here?
Yeah, but if you think like if Jeff was pointing out one place, you put like all the Gemara's together, you have
yeah,
like potential five and six or something.
Yeah, exactly. we're going to talk about that in a couple minutes. Just one second. So we're going to have to understand why it wasn't included in that Gemara. But a third answer is that all mitzvot spigam l'chaveiro are yad v'yad. You are not allowed to violate any mitzvot spigam l'chaveiro to save your life. Now what's the svara? The svara is that Hashem is mochel, you know, his mitzvos. So he says, you can violate Shabbos, you can violate Treif, you can violate whatever you want to save your life, but you can't wrong another person to save your life. Meaning, this is not a question of value. If I would say, what's worth more, that person's money or your life? It might be your life, it probably is your life, but you don't have the right to wrong someone else to save your life. It's a question of responsibility, you don't have that right. Now, just ask me a very simple question. Look at the big three. The big three, according to you, all mitzvahs be'al machadero, you're not allowed to violate, save your life. Mitzvahs be'al makom, you're allowed to violate, save your life, except for the big three. But if you look at the big three, they're not all be'al makom. They're also be'al machadero. So why do we need the big three if we already have a be'al machadero? Right? So if you, Avodah Zarah is fine. Avodah Zarah is completely be'al makom. But Ritzicha is be'al machadero. And Arias, even Arias, there are three categories of Arias, but it's also bin Adam l'chaveiro, right? Incest is the only aspect of Arias which is bin Adam l'makom, which is, Rambam discusses how there's no, you're not wronging any other person when you are, you know, if a father has an illicit relationship with one of his family members, there's no bin Adam l'chaveiro element. But when I have adultery, you are really, really, really hurting another person. Because that woman is in another relationship. And when you have, let's say you violate someone, which is actually the example of the Gemara gives, you are definitely violating a mitzvah ben al-chaveira. So the question we have to ask is, according to the Shita, this is actually the Binyan Tzion explains this. So the question is, according to the Shita, what's going on? How do we explain that? And the answer is that there's two components of every mitzvah ben al-chaveira. Number one, Hashem commanded it. So there's an aspect of the al-makam. Number two, there's a person you're wronging, or if it's a mitzvah asay, there's a person you're doing benefit to. So for every mitzvah b'nam l'makom, there's one component, b'nam l'makom. But for every mitzvah l'chaveiro, there's two components. So what's going on? By the big three, if it's a b'nam l'makom one, like a avodah zarah, that Hashem is saying you can't violate. B'nam l'chaveiro, there are two components. Number one is a b'nam l'chaveiro, number two is a b'nam l'makom. Normally, b'nam l'chaveiro, you always can't violate. B'nam l'makom, you can. Hashem is saying that not only can you violate the B'nam l'chaveiro side, but you also can't violate the B'nam l'makom side. So what's an afkanina? Let's say the person is mochel. So let's say we assume, like the Shita, like, you know, say Minchas Chinuch, that you own your body. And a person says, I allow you to kill me. You can kill me to save your life. In that case, there's no avera B'nam l'chaveiro, because he was mochel. Just like if I'm mochel on my money, you're not stealing from me if I give you my money. So you're not killing me if I am mochel. But it doesn't work, because the B'nai L'makom side is one of the big three. And the same thing on Gilei Raos. Let's say the person's mochel, the person you're wronging is mochel. They say you can do it. It doesn't matter. There's also B'nai L'makom side that says you can't. So those are our three, any questions? So those are our three main issues. Main answers. One is that this is a subcategory of murder. Number two is that this is really a big fourth. And number three is that all mitzvot ben al-chaveira are really yad v'yad. Now, just to give you the explicit shita of that this is really a big fourth, that there is really a big fourth avera, if you look at source number 23, the Ramban, he quotes this this brisa. Now, we don't hold a this halacha, but he's quoting this, an explanation of Rav Meir, who says you can't still save your life. He says, if you look in the end of the first line, Lefisha nimta the brisa chitzomis, meaning this kind of exotic brisa, shlosha dvar me'in onim b'mifnei pikuach nefesh ve'elohim, avod zari gilirai shvechazdamim. So there's the classic brisa of the big three, and then the Gemara, this brisa, adds this very interesting addition to the famous big three, which is Rav Meir Omer Afagezel, meaning that we have a big three and now we have a big fourth. Of course, the Ramban himself rejects this and says this is, you know, not. First of all, to know that we don't hold like this, just look throughout all the Gemaras and Shas, they're all the big three. So this Shita is kind of the svar behind the Shita and Shas, but we don't actually hold like it. Now, just to give you guys another example of this kind of application, was a very fascinating sugya, I think is perfectly applicable to this, is the sugya of embarrassing someone in public. So if you look at, there's a famous Gemara in Sota, that Yom Beis, if you look at source number 24, the bold, says, Noach lo adam sheyipol, sheyapil atzmo, l'toch kifshon ha'esh, v'al yalbin panel chavir v'rabim, minalim mitama. The Gemara says that it's better that you jump into a kishon esh, a pit of fire, than to embarrass someone in public. So what does this mean? Once again, it's not one of the big three. It's embarrassing someone in public. So one option is like the Meiri, who says that it's just musar. It's kind of like, you know, better jump into a pot of fire than embarrass someone in public. That's how bad embarrassing someone in public is. The Gemara's talk about how you lose your shem olam haba if you embarrass someone in public. They say it's, you know, as painful as death. So that's one option. It's just a really bad thing and don't do it. But there's another shita, which is, what do you guys think? Right? What other answers can you give? Why would you have to give up your life rather than embarrass someone in public?
I would have said the Avizari.
Ah, so the Avizari, we're going to get that. Avizari
Vitzicha. Yeah, I heard an answer also like, causing blood to rush up to someone's hand. And it's
so yeah, I think you heard it because you just kind of were absorbing the next source.
Those who says that this is if you're killing him.
What?
This is if you're killing him.
Ah, so we're going to get to that. So that's Rabbeinu Yonah. So look at source number 29. Very good, guys. So Rabbeinu Yonah says, if you look at the bull, he says that when you actually embarrass on public, number one, you're draining the blood from his face. So the blood is rushing from his head, so it's kind of like as if you killed him. Okay? And if you turn the page over, he says, not only is it physically like you killed him because the blood is draining from his face, but he says, Kitsar halvana mar mimavis. He says it's more painful than death. Which is really based on the Gemara, which we skipped, which is, if you look at source number 27, the bold, Kol hamavim panochaveira berabim ki'ilu shofichtam. It's as if you killed someone. The question is, how literally do you take that? So if we want to understand Rabbeinu Yonah, what does this mean? What does it mean when you embarrass someone in public as if you killed them? So one explanation is that's really painful. It's really painful. The guy is undergoing something excruciatingly painful. But is that murder or is that just torture? Meaning, is that murder or is that just causing someone extraordinary amount of suffering? Or you can think of it more as character murder. Because when I murder you, you leave this world. Your neshama leaves the world. When I embarrass you in public, we're not talking about a guy who says a joke. We're talking about a public gathering where you absolutely have your reputation destroyed. So what happens? You never, ever go back to the way you were. Your entire life is basically ruined because wherever you go, people will know you and will recognize you and will see you for that moment and you will be basically publicly humiliated forever. So it's an ongoing ki'ilu character murder where your entire life is ruined. But there's another option, which is not that this is just musr, and not that this is an avizrayu of murder, but that this is actually another version of the big four. If you look at Tosfos, source number 30, so the point, I mean, if you add up stealing, we'd have now big five. Okay? And then if you look at source number 30, why isn't this included in the big three? Look at the bold. Near Haidelo Chashim Lei, Behedia Gimel Avera, Sheinom Tem Bikoth Nefesh, Ovi Chachavim, Gilei Rai Shvi Chazan, and Mishim de Avera Salmas Panim, So the big three, all the Gemaras that talk about the big three, and Sanhedrin, and Yom and Pesachim, they all list sources for why this is one of the big three. And therefore, the only reason it's not included in those three could be technical, because it just doesn't have a source, and therefore really we have a big four or a big five, but it just doesn't have a source, it's more mitzvara. Or it could be that we really have a hierarchy in terms of the big three. That there's big three which are like really, you know, strong rooted big three in terms of their foundations and sources. And then there's kind of these others which are kind of building now, which is stealing, embarrassing some of the public. So now, to end off, I want to really give a very deep, you know, kind of transitioning more into the philosophy and machshava behind this, to really understand what's so bad about stealing. Why would stealing be considered an avizrayo of murder? And why would stealing be considered perhaps even a big four? Just before we do that, just in theory, the same answer we gave in terms of all mitzvahs ben al-chadir are included in the big three, including the Yair Le'avar, would also apply to the most common chadir Barabin if we wanted to just give that answer to it. Just kind of, to, you know, yeah.
If you think about it, the big three, they all incorporate their own a form of stealing, kind of. What is that you're stealing from God? Yisrael, then you're stealing someone's life. You're stealing someone's wife.
So, I mean, you can extend that for like a lot of ways to a lot of different things in terms of where you'd say that something less than. Really, it's in terms of wronging someone. So that's more in terms of a lot.
Yeah.
All a lot of them are kind of in that category. So you can say that stealing itself is just this kind of, it really is an embodiment of a lot, but then it shouldn't be a separate issue. So then you kind of have to create some hagdara of stealing is stealing everything, and there, and it's an example of wronging someone else, which really is all a lot of them in general. But I hear your start, meaning in general, stealing is more of a thematic nature of wronging someone else. But we're going to get to that. In terms of, let's build this slowly. Let's build this well, because this is going to really build a deep understanding of what stealing is and why it's so terrible. In order to understand why stealing is so terrible, you have to understand the nature of ownership. The nature of ownership. Meaning, why do you own what you own? The shirt on your off your back. Why can't I come and take what you own? Right? Why can't I come and just take, go into someone's house and take their things? So if you ask one of the, you know, a philosopher, they'll tell you that, listen, you know, what defines ownership? It's that you control it. For example, why, you know, 3,000 years ago, people living in the desert, and they are carrying all the things they own. Now, why do they own that? Because they control it. If someone came and took it from them, they would control it. It's really survival of the fittest. Whoever is strong, whoever can control things, they own it. Now, what's the problem with that version of ownership? It doesn't work. Society can't function that way. It can't be that whoever has control over their things, they own it. If they can't control it, they own it. Because then everyone would just take from everyone, and you'd have chaos. The strongest would have everything. They would, you know, rule based off of fear, and everyone who's weak would miss out. So society created this rule called ownership, where we have rules. If I buy something, it belongs to me. If I have a house, it belongs to me. You can't take it. Now, what's a very big problem with that? That means ownership is arbitrary. It's not really that you own what you own. It's that society has rules. But what if I don't want to be part of your society? Right? It's not that you really own what you own. It's that society has rules that say that you can't steal if you want to be part of our society. Now, many robbers will actually rationalize and say that stealing isn't wrong. It's just a rule that society made up. I just don't want to be part of society, so I'm going to steal. But I'm really just changing ownership. I'm really... The brilliance of that svara is that stealing isn't wrong. Stealing is a rule. But rules are only if you want to be part of the system. If I don't want to be part of your system, the rule doesn't exist. But there's a third understanding of ownership, which is the Jewish understanding of ownership, of a metaphysical, metahalachic, halachic connection to the object. You own what you own because the object is connected to you halachically. Metaphysically, this actually becomes an extension of you. You actually own the object. For example, you are a soul. You are a neshama. But an expression of you, an expression of your neshama, is your body. But an expression, an extension of your body is, let's say, your clothes. But an extension of you even further is all of your things. So if you want to understand the embodiment of you, in terms of a metaphysical being, it's you, your body, the clothes you're wearing, and everything else connected to you. So your things are halachically connected to you. You own what you own because halachically, it's in your rishus. Halachically, you are the Baal. Now, this applies to also using Shas Yidur Mamonos. So, for example, a ganav, the Gemara says that it's in both of their rishios. Why? Because if I steal something from you, it's in my control, but halachically, it's still connected to you. In Aveda, it's left your control, your physical, you know, rishios, but halachically, it's still connected to you. Kinyanim, I have to break the halachic connection to me, and I have to build the connection to you. So Hagbah and Mashicha and all those different ways are ways of severing my connection to the object and creating it to you. Hefker, Mechila, Siluk, those are ways of cutting off the connection of the object to me. Yeush is cutting off the connection to me. Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker is where Bezdin has the ability to metahalachically disconnect my connection to the object. And there's a whole sugya in Shas whether or not Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker can also create the connection to someone else. So that's the whole interplay of ownership, is that there is an actual metaphysical, metahalachic bond that you have to the object. But why? Just understand this really well. You come into the world, and you are a human being, and you have time. You have time. Right? That time is potential. Now, you go through life and you use time. You translate time into actuality, into reality. So let's say you live for 100 years. When you were born, you have 100 years of time of potential, and you choose to translate that potential into actuality. So you can go through life translating all that potential into something spiritual. You can expand your mind, expand your consciousness. You can learn Torah. You can do mitzvahs. You can develop your relationship with Hashem. And you can build yourself, and now that becomes an expression of you in the world. You are the embodiment of everything you've built and accomplished based on all of the potential that you have turned into actuality. And you can also turn all that potential into physical reality. You can grow your things. You can grow your body. You can develop an increase in assets, in money. And you're basically, your things become an expression of you. They become a way that you manifest your potential into this world. But in both case scenarios, whether you do one or the other or both, those are the expression of you in the world. That's you. That's what you've built. How you translate your potential, your time, into reality is really how you're translating your potential into actuality. And now, at the end of your life, you're going to be the result of everything you've built. You can build physical things that you can't take on, or you can build spiritual things which become an embodiment, an encompassment of you, which lasts for eternity. Now, it doesn't mean that building things in this world is bad. It's the focus. It's what are you actually here to build? Now, for example, there's a halacha that if someone supports Torah learning with money, and that person couldn't have learned without you, meaning you are now the cause of this person learning Torah, so the halacha is that you both get that share in olam. You both get to know why. It's beautiful. Because you both took your potential, your time, and you both used it and translated it in order for that Torah to be learned. Only because of your time was that Torah learned. Only because of his time was that Torah learned. Now, is it really fundamentally the same, the person who learned versus the person who supported? We can argue. But in terms of the schar, you are both the cause of that result. So all of life is really about translating your time and potential into actuality. It's about what are you building with your life? Are you connecting yourself to Hashem? Are you expanding your mind and your consciousness? Are you developing yourself? Are you learning Torah? Are you building mitzvot? Are you building your eternity? Now, when someone steals, they are literally ripping off a piece of you. Because now you know that your things are an expression of you. They're time that you translate into actuality. They're a piece of you that you chose to actualize into something concrete. And when someone steals that from you, they're stealing time. They're stealing a piece of you. They are actually committing a form of murder. They are ripping off something which you chose to manifest in the world. So whether you think that that's a form of murder, like an Avzaya Ritzicha, or you think that this is just a different category of something terrible, like perhaps a big fourth, like the Ramban quoting this obscure Brisa, quoting Rav Meir, holding that even Gezel is considered to be one of the big four, you understand the severity of stealing. And this is a Shiloh Zecher Nishmas, my grandfather. He spent his entire life, Eliezer Tzvi Ben Shmuel, Professor Louis Feldman, spent his entire life translating all of his time and potential into amazing, amazing results. And he should serve as an inspiration to us of living a life really devoted towards growth and really developing your relationship with the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We should be inspired by him to really devote our lives towards Muhammad.